Good day and welcome to the University of Minnesota Cropcast from the University of Minnesota Extension. I'm your host, Dave Nicolai, University of Minnesota Extension Educator in Field Crops, and I'm here today with our co-host, Dr. Seth Nave. Seth is a University of Minnesota Extension Soybean Specialist, and Seth, we have a really good opportunity here as we get into the fall in terms of soybean harvest to think a little bit about our markets and marketing. So we've invited in Ed Ussett. Ed is the grain marketing specialist, or grain marketing economist, I should say, for the Center for Farm Financial Management here at the University of Minnesota. So Ed, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Doing great, Dave.
Well, this is a good opportunity. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of things in the news. We talk about options in terms of our grain situation here, in terms of our crop. We're going to be looking at a very good crop in a lot of cases. I don't know necessarily records, but good yields, I think, across Minnesota for both corn and soybeans. And with that, Ed, farmers have to consider a couple of things. One is they may have some old crop soybeans still around. I don't know if they're necessarily they're moving those out or they've been priced. But, of course, you know, the new crop is going to be with us shortly. Your observations a little bit about how some of these national and international situations are going to affect here Minnesota farmers. And we'll probably get into a little bit about what the options are for Minnesota soybean growers in terms of growing this crop. So I'm really basically, unless Seth has got some other things he'd like to push in here at this point in time, going to turn the microphone over to you.
Okay, Dave, thank you. We should note that just earlier today, USDA released their September WASDE report, which confirmed a very large corn crop, a very large soybean crop. They did pare back their expectations for the nationwide average yield. They were up at 188.8 bushels per acre in the August report. They pared that back to a mere 186.7 bushels per acre. Both that's a record yield by far in the United States, setting the stage for a 16.8 billion bushels of corn being produced this year. The soybean figure, they tapered it back nationwide, 53.5 versus 53.6 bushels per acre, 4.3 billion bushels in production. Those are, yeah, the debate going into this report is, would we have a huge crop or would it just be massive? And it's a huge crop. I think from very quickly a little trivia here, it will be interesting to see where Minnesota comes in. I didn't have a chance to see their projection for the Minnesota crop, but Minnesota has never averaged more than 200 bushels per acre for corn. We did 195, I think, 3 years ago. I think we have a shot at that 200 bushel mark. It's sort of trivia, but it's a big, big crop. And I'll bet you didn't know that Minnesota set a record for soybean yields in 2016, 9 years ago, 52 bushels per acre. I like to think we'll top that this year.
Well, it certainly looks like we've had some good weather. We've had variable rainfall. I did notice our growing degree day units for corn, actually we're tracking right well with the five-year average based upon the GDUs and that we measure out at the Lamberton Research Center in southwestern Minnesota. So we're right on par, you know, in terms of that. Now, you know, one of the common things, Seth, that is always talked about is, you know, August rains help to make that soybean crop. And any things that you can talk a little bit about what we might be expecting here or observations that you've had? I know you had a chance to go down to your drainage site down at Wells, Minnesota here this last week. What are your thoughts on terms of crop numbers?
Well, I think we got a little bit overly optimistic with the early, when these kind of August conditions were around. I think Minnesota and what I'm hearing from other states is that, you know, the late season conditions just aren't as good as what, you know, things were tracking. And I guess this is pretty common in soybean when you have really good yields and the crop looks really good. That's when we start to see disease. You know, the classic one is white mold always shows up in years like this where we have really tall canopies and nice lush canopies. But this year, just with the heavy rains and things, we are seeing a lot of disease that we don't normally see here in Minnesota in our soybeans. And I think that's going to nick things a little bit. And then we had this really cool temperatures a week or two ago now, and that really set our soybeans back. And that's tough on a soybean crop that kind of thinks of itself as a little bit more of a tropical crop. So I think it's going to cut the top off of this thing a little bit, but it's all about how many drown out spots and no plant areas we get. Those seem to really, really kill us in the end.
Well, certainly either way, we talk about this, Ed, there is a significant crop out there. We were talking a little bit before we started about some strategies, and then you can reflect on some of the current situations, but let's talk a little bit about situations that might involve what last year's crop, or what we refer to in the trade as old crop. Now, some of that obviously might be priced into the system, may or may not be. Any observations or suggestions you might have if folks are dealing with that? And I'm also thinking about the next question here is on-farm storage, but I'll turn it to you.
Well, the two go together. If anyone out there is holding old crop still, which I hope they aren't, but I know there are a few bushels out there, they're going to have to move before harvest just to make room for the new crop. And it's going to be a painful, a bitter pill to swallow, but I don't know any way around that at this point. So move those old crop bushels. I like to talk about the 11th commandment of grain marketing. Thou shalt not hold unpriced corn or soybeans in the bin after July 1. But, Dave, Seth, I think we have a few sinners out there. They're just going to have to repent and move forward.
Well, certainly, what are your thoughts and observations and what have you been hearing about some of our elevators, up and down the line, whether they're in Minnesota or just across the border into Dakotas with the soybean crop? What do you hear about their situations in terms of availability for storage for both old and new?
Well, I won't go by what I hear. I'll go by what I see in basis levels. And in southwestern Minnesota, you've got basis levels 93 under the November contract. Now, the last 2 years, basis levels were not very good at harvest, but they were 30 to 35 cents better than that. Now, if we cross the border into the Dakotas, particularly North Dakota, but South Dakota too, the Dakotas and western Minnesota is really depends on exports, highly depends on exports. We've got these shuttle loading facilities in the Dakotas and throughout Minnesota designed to load 100 car trains very quickly. They go to the West Coast to feed the export market. Dave, we have nothing on the books in terms of new crop sales. And by the way, the new marketing year started 12 days ago on September 1. We have nothing on the books with China. The export market is, frankly, for soybeans, sort of dead in the water. And that's why basis levels in North Dakota are 155 to 170 cents under the November contract. They got nowhere to go with them.
That's, we've talked about this before, and you and I shared exactly the same thoughts on the Dakotas, especially North Dakota. And it's the way I talk about North Dakota is that the Chinese really built soybean production in North Dakota. It's there aren't any animals there. There wasn't any crushing capacity. It was just a big draw from China through the Pacific Northwest by rail that really created the current crop production system that has soybeans so integral in that system. So when that pipe gets shut off, there's just nowhere for these things to go. And it's you're starting to look at those levels of about, what it would cost to truck a load of soybeans from the, North Dakota down into southern Minnesota or Iowa to a processing plant or something like that is what you end up paying for. Just to get rid of those soybeans from those areas if there's no way to get rid of those by their most efficient route to the PNW.
Now, there are several crushing facilities in the Dakotas, some very big ones. Another one opened, I believe, in South Dakota just in the last week. But crush capacity can't take them all. I want to note that our soybean crushing plants in Mankato and Fairmont are bidding 40 under the November contract. Sounds good compared to 93 under, but at this time of year, I would expect that to be 40 to 50 cents better in a normal year, if there is such a thing.
Well, it's, if you think what is basis, it's mostly paying for this transportation to the demand point, and the demand point is Mankato. It literally should be something closer to zero, and just by definition, and to have to be penalized that at that level at the farm level is really disappointing, and it doesn't bode very well for us, does it?
No, it doesn't. I've been talking about the soybean market, paraphrasing or using an old Charles Dickens novel, A Tale of Two Cities. By the way, I wrote a report in high school on A Tale of Two Cities and never read the book. Just a little bit for you.
Chat GTP, is that what you used when you were in high school?
That wasn't around way back then. But my point is, the soybean market, it depends on exports and domestic demand. Domestic demand is crush demand. Crush demand is doing very well. It's been expanding a lot throughout the country, but of course, renewable diesel and some of the mandates there, that side of the market's looking good. But we have, over the last 50 years, consistently exported somewhere between 40 to 50% of our soybean production. We need the exports. Crush demand is not going to make up for that big deficit. And that's crush demand is the best of times. Export demand is the worst of times.
I did. You know, these soybeans are going to go somewhere. I think a lot of, my personal view, and of course not as a non-farmer, non-economist, I have no skin in this game at all. But from the outside, the way I look at it, especially if we learned anything from Trump 1, was that, you know, there was a period of adjustment where the market got pretty screwed up because the Chinese quit buying from the U.S. mostly, but there was still some purchasing. And then that had to just shift the whole market around. I think the market learned a lot, and I'm hopeful that things are going to go a little bit more smoothly. They're definitely going to buy a lot more Brazilian soybeans this year than they've ever grew. They're doing it right now. But that just means that some of those markets that were buying Brazilian soybeans that I visit in the wintertime every year, those beans are going to be a little bit more scarce for them, and so they're going to be looking elsewhere. I just talked to my colleague from Arkansas, and he mentioned that the Taiwanese crushers are coming into Arkansas, into Little Rock, to meet the governor next Tuesday, and he's going to meet with the producers in the afternoon. They're going to meet with the producers in the afternoon, sign some sort of MOU to purchase some soybeans out of Arkansas. And to me, that smells a lot like those Arkansas soybeans smell like a replacement for Brazilian soybeans. So that's good news for American farmers, is that there's indication that these folks are finding new ways around it. And even for, I would argue that even for Minnesota producers, that selling Arkansas soybeans is to their benefit, because that just pulls beans out of the pool. It drops the level. There's less there, so I think it's going to help us all. It'd be great if they came to Minnesota and purchased some of ours, but if they're going to buy some from Arkansas, that's probably the next best thing.
All sales are good, and I'll go back to 2018-19 too, when China shied away from us the first time, went to Brazil, and I recall reading articles about, oh, look at this, we're exporting a lot more to Europe and different destinations U.S. soybeans were going, and they're saying, see, we're building markets. And I'm like, well, actually, they got crowded out of Brazil. They had to go somewhere for them. So they came to us, which was good. We'll take the sales. But that's got to take time to develop that. And I'm very concerned about this upcoming harvest. We've got a whole lot of bushels searching for limited storage space. It's going to be a problem.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit in terms of, take your southern Minnesota farmer or central or even the Red River Valley for that matter. What are some marketing strategies that the farmers, as they get into this field, if they haven't already priced things and so forth, and if they're, quote, off the combine, do they sell futures, or what other tools might they use? Yeah, let's say they have capacity for storage someplace, okay, but they still have to deal with the crop and the pricing. What are some recommendations that you might have for this year's crop and the farmers if things aren't already priced in place?
Well, we've got an oversupply, plenty of stocks, and low prices, and with that comes large positive carrying charges. I'm talking about, you look at November soybeans, which as I speak are somewhere just shy of $10. By the way, we had a little post-market or post-report rally. Soybeans were actually up 14 cents a bushel when I left my office. So you've got November beans somewhere around $10.45 to $10.50 a bushel. But the March contract is at a premium. The May contract's at a big premium. The carries are large. If you've got a place to put the soybeans and you look out to bids for April, May delivery, you can get 40 to 50 cents a bushel premium. Got to have a place to put those soybeans. And if you're going into town and finding a place to pay 4 cents a month, got to take a lot of fun out of that if you're paying a commercial storage rate. But if you have storage, you can sell that big carry forward contract at a 40, 50 cent premium. By the way, the same thing's going on in corn, but you have to have the storage, Dave.
So but that's some optimism in the market that says at least there's going to be sales by then.
Yes.
So we're certainly assume so, but there is, you know, there is always risk that, you know, that some of this is going to linger on, and a big crop here, and we don't know what South America is going to be next year. So, you know, there is some downside risk of even holding on, because we could go even the other way. But I think taking that option for that spring delivery might be good. I'm continually impressed by all the big shiny grain facilities that farmers have built in the years where they had a few dollars. A lot of that money clearly went into storage, and so I think that's really, really benefiting. That I think the farmers built that for good times, but I think it's going to maybe they'll really pay off in these really tough times.
The Dakotas have lagged behind a bit on building storage. They have built a lot. Producers have built a lot of storage. But the Dakotas were really ramped up for small grain production, and the yields on small grains are a lot less than corn. So they were behind the eight ball, if you will, on building storage. They've come a long way, caught up a lot. Dave, I agree with you. That the thought being, I'm seeing these large carries of 40, 50 cent premium out to spring delivery. And there will be a temptation if you've got storage. Well, I'll just put it in the bin and I'll wait and see if I can do even better. Maybe they can. I don't know. I think my biggest concern is there's just a tremendous amount of uncertainty in this market about trade policy, tariff policy, and I cannot trade uncertainty. Markets hate uncertainty. Risk can be measured. Uncertainty cannot be measured. And the problem, if you have just unpriced soybeans in the bin, and I don't mind if you want to do it with some and with some of your corn, but there's a chance that we get out to next spring and today's prices, they're no different. There's no different.
So if a grower has capacity for storage for both crops, do they look at, or does it behoove them to say, well, you know, maybe I'll move some of that corn someplace else to free up more room for soybeans? I mean, I don't know from a, you know, what they're, you know, committed to, but is there an ability to, quote, shift things around a little bit from a storage standpoint on farm? Obviously, you know, elevators are going to be restricted in this, too.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of this situation from a basis standpoint. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the corn basis is not that bad.
Yeah.
Massive crop coming, and we're looking at 45 under the Dease in southwestern Minnesota. If there's such a thing as normal, I'd say 45 under is pretty close. It's a decent basis. They've got a decent basis out to April, May for delivery out there. Here's where the uncertainty comes in, but the basis is very poor in soybeans. And if you're an eternal optimist and you think we're going to turn things around, you sell the corn now, mm-hmm. you hang on to the soybeans, which frankly is the opposite of what most producers like to do. But you hope for that soybean basis to firm up.
Remind our listeners again, where does our corn crop go in terms of consumption here, exports, other countries, you know, and so forth? We're not necessarily exporting a great volume of it. We've sold, obviously, to, you know, cattle situations, other countries. But where do you see that corn crop being utilized in the next year?
Well, here in Minnesota, and I didn't bring my notes with me, I think we've got ethanol production capacity that speaks to half of our crop in Minnesota. We were ahead of the curve decades ago on ethanol, and I can't remember. We've got a good number of plants, and they're all huge. So roughly half our corn crop goes into ethanol. We've got a lot of hogs and cattle, big dairy operations soak some up. Nationwide, we export roughly 15 to 20% of the corn produced, and you know, that shuttle program I talked about going west, right, for soybeans, we do that with corn too.
So there's optimism and so forth in terms of probably some storage space someplace if that corn crop is moving.
Hopefully, yeah.
But I think maybe just to reflect on this question just a little bit, David, I think the other way to phrase this is this: these biofuel markets really help build a base around demand for us, and so that we have this relatively consistent baseline that we can drive into biofuels and utilize a big chunk of our corn and our soybeans for those specific markets really just helps prop us up from the bottom side. You know, I think a lot of us got really excited about, you know, sustainable aviation fuels and the future of a lot of this stuff, and I think that optimism has been tamped down just a little bit recently. But I don't think overall that I think that most people are considering this continued level of biofuels are still going to be important for the market. I think energy self-sufficiency is important for the administration. So I think there's going to be continued support for the next few years, at least in that market, is what I assume is going to happen.
Are we going to be building more soybean crushing plants? Is that going to help, or is that just too so far down the line?
Oh, we've already done it in the last 2.5 years. I think I've got a pretty chart. Doesn't work well on podcasts though, okay. But I've got a pretty chart. I believe we have opened 11 plants throughout the country in the last 2.5 years. Now, when I say plant, they're either brand new plants in a new facility or a major expansion of an existing plant. And as I said, one just opened a week ago in South Dakota. I think there are another 4 or 5 in the country that are being constructed as we speak, and they will open in the next year and a half. By the way, when you open or expand 15 plants in a 3-4 year period, keep in mind there's only about 60 soy crushing facilities in the country before this started. They tend to be very, very large.
Yeah, and this will save our bacon if we can really keep this thing rolling, because I think by a lot of the calculations, folks were considering that our soybean exports could reduce by about a quarter, I think, because they're getting soaked up by this additional crush in the U.S. So the available soybeans for export pre-China tariff issues, I think for, you know, the coming few years, at least once these things get built out, I think was a significant shrink. And so there was a lot of the folks that I was, the whole bean purchasers overseas that I was, or I was meeting with, were quite concerned that if they had to continue to bid against China, that there weren't going to be available soybeans in the U.S. So the flip side of that is if China's not in the equation, it just means that there's the glut of soybeans is going to be smaller with these processing plants. Just another way of putting this painting the whole story.
The crushing facility, the expansion is very impressive, but it really depends on some of these mandates and tax policies around renewable diesel. That depends a lot on that. I'm not a policy expert. You'll have to get someone else in to talk about that.
And the other nice thing, and Ed mentioned this at the beginning, was that you know, these crush plants are really being built kind of around the periphery. They're not all right along the rivers necessarily. And so we've got North and South Dakota are building several. And so this is really soaking up some of those extra production acres of soybeans that would have been, that, you know, would have gone off as whole soybeans. And so not necessarily competing directly with some of the, I think the processors were looking for some low basis areas probably.
Sure.
And so get in those areas and make some meal and oil. They really look, you know, of course they're making for the oil. They're looking for the oil sales. So
yeah, yeah. Hard to exaggerate how large these plants are. Some of these plants, I know the ones in Minnesota. Several of them take over 100,000 bushels of soybeans every day. I think the biggest one might be more like 125,000 bushels every day, and they try to run right around the clock. They hope to run 350, 360 days in a year.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we're a little bit off. I'm dragging us off topic here, but it just talks about the complexities, because the North Dakotans were really looking for a lot of that meal to be exported across into Canada, and so that's the export location for the meal coming out of North Dakota, and so. You know, those poor folks in North Dakota are watching negotiations with China and Canada quite eagerly, and wanting to make sure that they have market access in those things. And so there's a real opportunity to sell soybeans into Canada and soybean meal into Canada. Let them make some pork up there, but it gets tougher with some of these challenges.
Well, I don't know how we can negotiate our way into not getting along with our Canadian neighbors. Hell, I speak Canadian, you know, and I meet them, talk to them, and I've talked to several people who deal with the Canadians, and they're quite upset with us.
Well, hopefully things will work out. I, you know, it's as you say, it's a tale of two cities, and it's certainly a tale of politics, tariffs, and so forth, as we go forward. I'm sure that there might be other situations where growers down the line might benefit from some other types of I'll just call it outside payments, you know, in the government involved. So but that's not necessarily a replacement for marketing, and you know, a long term, and everybody's situation individually is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your recommendation would be, you know, obviously if you're not sure, is to maybe consult outside people or farm management or grain marketers, people that they work with or trust in terms of on yeah. farm situations. But other than just, you know, locking the bend door and waiting.
Yeah. You mentioned the possibility of payments to make up for some of the trade troubles. And I have no insight on that, but they're talking about that. They're talking about it in Washington. I think it's not the preferred way to make money, and it doesn't solve your problem if you don't know where to go with your soybeans in 3 weeks. But they are talking about those things.
So is there any last, I've helped paint a kind of a dreary picture for us here. What's any last bit of advice you can give producers, especially from a risk management standpoint? What's one thing that you could help them do to just reduce overall downside risk in this kind of market? What kind of approach or what kind of solace can you give them, especially if things are really, really tight for folks and they're really concerned?
Well, you saved the easy questions for last. I'm not sure where to go with that, Seth. This is a very difficult time. Cash prices are well below production costs. Even those prices with a premium out to the spring are below production costs. I think every producer listening is thinking about ways to reduce their costs, both on the farm and with the family. And they're going to need to do that now and in the next year, because it doesn't look like we're going to turn it around real quickly. We're in this period of uncertainty. I hate uncertainty, because if we could wave a magic wand and do away with some of these tariff and trade issues, make friends again, we can turn this thing around relatively quickly. But that may not happen.
Well, Ed, we're drawing to a close here in our time frame today, but based upon your comments, I think we need to get together again here this fall and see where things are at, because it does sound like things will probably change one way or the other. Change is certain, and so forth, I think, as we go forward with this. So thank you again for your time. Appreciate that, and I know that you're going to be out and about on extension events and other opportunities and writing and being interviewed. So there'll certainly be that situation as we go forward for an opportunity with that. So with that, we'd like to thank Ed Ussett, who is our grain marketing economist for the Center for Farm Financial Management here at the University of Minnesota. I'd also like to thank my co-host, Dr. Seth Knave. Seth is a University of Minnesota soybean extension specialist. This is Dave Nicolai with another episode of University of Minnesota CropCast.